German is not German is definitely not German. There are intricacies all across the place in Central Europe, and today we'll talk about them. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries,
Germany,
Deutschland,
Austria,
Österreich,
Switzerland,
Schweiz,
blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hello.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. Welcome to a, I would say, culturally, verbally significant episode. We are diving into German from all kinds of perspectives. Claudia, welcome to the podcast.
Grüß Gott.
And Deb, finally, Swiss representation at the podcast. Welcome to the show.
Grüezi miteinander.
See, and there it is. The first instance of Swiss German. Switcher. Switcher? How do you actually say that?
Schweizerdeutsch.
See, the Austrian already struggles. What does the German think about Swiss German?
Well, I think it depends on where you come from. I happen to live and grow up only less than 2 hours from the Swiss border, so I can kind of sort of understand it if they don't talk too fast. But the further you go north and the further you get away from the southern borders, whether that's Austrian or Schweizerdeutsch, the harder it is going to be to understand those dialects. Plus, you know, in Schwaben, Swabia, where I grew up, we have our own dialect. So I think it doesn't even sound like German. It sounds like a completely different language.
Well, Deb, unbeknownst to you, I use you and Peter quite frequently in my German classes as an example. We did actually have a short conversation, it was about a year ago, at the main stairs at the GAI house, and we were all talking in German, and suddenly you and Peter kind of fell into Swiss German, and I just stood there catching myself in a moment of, I do not understand a single word. From your perspective, how different, I mean, obviously for me it's completely different, but from your perspective, how different is Swiss German actually from High German or regular German, if you want to call that?
I mean, I almost consider it a different language. Most people say it's a dialect, but there's a little bit of discussion on that sometimes. Is it a different language? Is it just a dialect? But I think it's quite different. Just the music, the intonation of it, it's very sing-songy. So this German's very sort of up and down. We use a lot more guttural. Mm-hmm. People, English speakers, usually think of German as kind of guttural. Yeah. Well, Swiss German's even more so.
Yes.
Do you have any historic knowledge as to where it actually originated and how it came about? I mean, it's still German, but then again, it's not. What prompted the Swiss to go in that direction? Or is it just a mishmash of everything and it just happened to come about?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Well, it's the same thing, I think. I mean, why do Austrians speak differently? Why do people in different parts of Germany all speak differently, right?
Yeah, it was more along the lines of when I listen to you, Schwab, if you will, out of the Schwabenland, I have a higher probability of still catching a couple of things here and there.
Yeah, but I don't speak really heavy-duty Schwabish. I mean, if I did, I have a really hard time doing it because obviously completely out of context. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when I speak to somebody else who's also from Schwaben, I speak a lot more Schwabish. The same thing would be if you spoke to somebody who's also from Austria. You would probably speak more Austrian.
How do we go about teaching this in the best possible fashion then, other than, of course, remaining in High German, which is sort of the one unifying language that we all speak? Can we even teach regional or to the degree that somebody who travels to Switzerland actually would be functional?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No way.
I'm a native German speaker, and I have a hard time understanding people speaking Schweizerdeutsch. And I mean, just as an example, you know, if we just used a quick sentence in Hochdeutsch, if we say, Guten Morgen, wie geht es Ihnen? How would you say that in Schweizerdeutsch?
Formal. Guten Morgen, wie geht's Ihnen?
Yeah.
I actually got that, but I think I may have only understood it because you laid it up with High German, right?
In
Austria, we would probably say Grüß Gott, wie geht's? Oder Servus, wie geht's?
And would you say Ihnen? Would you use the more formal if that was?
We can, but frequently we just simply amend it because it's implied.
Yeah.
And it's implied in our body language, if you will, that we do keep a respectful distance. We do stretch out our hand for the obligatory handshake. Yeah. At least that's what it was like a couple of years ago. I don't think that standards have changed that much. So, yes, the formality is implied. Because as soon as we're going informal, I would still say the same thing.
Right.
That's the interesting thing about this. That it would still be wie geht's.
Yeah, and see, in Switzerland, you would never do that. You would, wie geht's would be way too informal. So to someone you don't know on the street, you'd have to use the formal wie geht's Ihnen.
Wie geht's Ihnen.
Under which circumstances do you actually depart from the formal to the informal?
I mean, we do, you know, among friends, but I think in businesses, like in Germany, because I lived in the Black Forest for 3 years, and people would say tschüss,
yeah,
and that would be way too informal for Switzerland. You know, like, say you're at a grocery store or something, and saying goodbye, or the bakery, you'd say Auf Wiedersehen.
Yep.
In Swiss German. So I think we're just, as a country, a little bit more formal than Germany. And I don't know about Austria, but...
Can you bring your microphone just a little bit closer? Sweet, thank you. In Austria, I think we look at it from a hierarchical perspective, if you will, that the person who is older, the person who has the perceived higher standards, or a higher status, not standard, status in society, is the person that initiates whether we leave formality and go to informal. Otherwise, it would really be considered improper.
Yeah, and in Germany, it's similar too, and it always depends on the context and on the situation. In Germany, most of the time you would start formal and then it becomes more informal. But I mean, my dad worked with colleagues for decades and they may have called each other by their first name, but then still used Z. Mm-hmm. Or my mom, you know, lived, my parents lived next to people for decades and still didn't call the person by their first name. So it just always kind of depends on how close you are or how close you want to be with that person.
But what's it like in Switzerland? Who initiates the change, if you will, and under what circumstances?
It's the same. It's the hierarchy, the older, the person with the higher position. But for example, growing up, my grandparents, I had to call Z, which...
Formal, wow.
Formal, yeah.
You were formal with your grandparents.
Yeah, I'd have to say Grüezi, which is formal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say Herr oder Frau Gosweiler, but so I think I called them by their first names possibly, but I would address them as formal. My kids, I don't have them do that, so that's definitely changed. But older generation,
so if that definitely happened. If Grüezi is the formal way of greeting somebody, what's less formal?
Hoi.
Hoi.
Hoi. H-O-I.
Okay.
Oh, H-O-I.
So that would be the perhaps Austrian version then of Servus.
Servus, or in southern Germany we'd say Hallole. So we do a lot of in Schwäbisch is with that L-E at the end, right, which makes things smaller as well, but also is a more informal way of talking.
What's interesting about this, and I'm just observing myself, if you will, in these conversations, I'm really catching myself being quite surprised by some of the things I'm hearing. So, for instance, addressing your grandparents in a formal manner, that's something that would have never even occurred to me that this is a standard, a cultural standard, if you will.
Or maybe it used to be.
Yeah. Or used to be.
Or used to be, yeah. What about titles? That's been one of the things that I've been asked in class quite frequently. How do you use titles, doctor or the master's degree, which we use, or the engineering degree and so forth, which in the US we commonly use a doctor, but I think the assumption then is it's a medical doctor. Unless you're in higher ed, then it's sort of a more generalized perspective. Outside of higher ed, doctors are usually physicians. Then we call them doctor. Otherwise, we sort of skip around the titles. What is it like in Switzerland? Are we using titles or did you depart from that?
No, like if somebody has a PhD, would say Herr oder Frau Doktor Erdmann,
yep.
zum Beispiel. And then otherwise an Arzt, Ärztin. But that's, I think we use the term actually Arzt and Doktor. Also, ich gehe zum Doktor.
Sure.
And das bedeutet, that means
yeah.
I'm going to the, ich gehe zum Arzt.
Yeah. And if you address the doctor then personally, so in a personal conversation, do you maintain the title or do you just go with last name? What does that look like commonly?
I would say normally just Herr oder Frau and the last name.
Interesting, because the I would say the fable has it more or less that the Swiss are incredibly essentially in tune with the academic titles and use them broadly. Mm. At least that's what I heard, and I may very well need to stand corrected on that. So that's no longer the case in that fashion?
I mean, if I'm just going to my, you know, with my kids to their yearly checkup, I wouldn't call it the doctor, Herr oder Frau Doktor. Well, I don't think I would. I would just say last name. But if I'm referring, if I'm talking about them in any way, then I would definitely...
And maybe that's also something that's loosening up, because my mom's generation was a lot more formal with people of, you know, that had a degree or higher standing or that were doctors or whatever. And my mom would always address somebody as a Herr, Frau, Doktor, blah, 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 even if it was a more casual environment. So I think the same reason... as what you mentioned, Deb, with, you know, your children or you having to address your grandparents as in a formal manner. I think some of those formal structures are kind of slowly becoming less and less. It still means we have Z and Du, but I think it's loosening up all across.
Oh, for sure. In general, things are getting less formal in, I'm sure, all three countries.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a part of that.
Yep. Interesting. Again, I'm just sitting here partially shocked, if you will. I guess time has passed me by and I didn't quite notice that it actually did. But as far as I remember, an academic title is a title that was heavily, heavily used, at least in Austria anyway. So for instance, even when I talk with my dad on the phone or via WhatsApp these days, and he refers to people that he is meeting with or has a meeting scheduled with, he still refers to them by academic title, whether that's the master's degree and or the PhD. We are evidently, as opposed to perhaps Switzerland or Germany, particularly Germany, as far as I remember, very much in tune with, oh, this person is an academic.
But I think it's because your dad is a little bit older.
Oh, yeah.
Well, right? It might be. It might
don't tell
be,
him that.
No, but I think it might just be a leftover of a little bit older generation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if you took somebody who was younger, they may or may not do that anymore. Like I said, my mom still does it. And, you know, I don't know how old your dad is, but he's also probably a little bit older.
70.
Right. So I think it's a carryover from that generation.
I think so too. Yeah, it was a sign of respect to address people that, and title is important, right? I mean,
yep.
I mean, not to belabor the point here, but for instance, when I send emails within Hamelin, for instance, where I also have the pleasure and privilege of being at, I address my department chair, for instance, as doctor instead of going with first name. And it now actually really just occurs to me that my colleagues, when they email around and my department chair is included, they're all on first name basis. I think I'm the one sort of stuck in the old days.
And that's okay. I don't think, you know, I don't think you can go wrong with using a more formal way of addressing, better than the other way around if somebody expects to be addressed formally. But I'd like to actually ask Deb a little bit more about Switzerland as a whole, because we were just talking before that any and all of the discussions or things that we've had before about Switzerland was, you know, Googled. We didn't have a native Swiss
that's person. True.
So just tell us, you know, Switzerland, how, you know, how how big is it? I know in addition to German, there are actually other languages being used, and, you know, some of the larger cities, a little bit about the culture. I mean, I think that might just be something that that could be helpful for people who are listening.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Switzerland is a small country. Obviously, it's got about 26 cantons. A couple of them are half cantons, they're called.
What's a canton?
A canton would be like a state here.
Okay.
And about 60%, I think, are Swiss German speaking, and then I think it's about 20 or 30% French, and then maybe 10% Italian, and then there's a really small percentage of Romanisch, which is like a Romance language.
Right.
Some people say it's the closest to Latin still spoken, but who knows if that's true. When I hear it, I kind of think, oh, am I hearing Swiss German? No, French? No, Italian? No, what is that? I don't even really know it very well. It's a very, I feel like it has words from all the three different other languages in it, almost.
And
so it's quite interesting.
Romance is being passed on but not taught in school.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so. It's definitely still passed on. It's mountain villages, mostly small villages where people certainly speak the other languages too, maybe Italian or French or German, but it's almost like it's passed on alongside other languages.
Yeah.
It's my understanding.
And then I think, you know, people, when they hear Switzerland, they think idyllic mountain villages and, you know, banking and money and finance, right? How does that all work together? You know, how is Switzerland, I don't know, geographically, obviously it's a mountain country. It's pretty much all mountainous, but, you know, it also has, in addition to banking, other business and industry. Mm-hmm. And so kind of from your perception, how does Switzerland look?
I mean, banking is a big thing, and a lot of people are involved in banking, I think, in Switzerland. But yeah, you've got everything, just like any other country. Every small village, some villages are tiny up in the mountains, but they're all accessible by public transportation. So really, even if you live in a small city, you can make it to the city. You're not sort of cut off. It's not like... I feel like Switzerland's very well connected. It's not like you have these mountain villages that are completely disconnected from the rest of Switzerland or something. It's well connected. People, you know, take public transport all around. And and then the bigger cities are a bit away from the mountains. So like Zurich is north of the mountain. Geneva, another bigger city, is south of the mountains.
Basel,
North, Bern. Bern is probably the city that's mostly in the mountains,
right.
the biggest city, and our capital city.
Yeah,
not Zurich, like a lot of people think. But.
It's interesting because Instagram and some of the Instagram accounts certainly make it look like every village in Switzerland is secluded and cut off from the world and basically similar to Hobbiton.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Everything is wonderful and... there are no cares in the world.
There is the one town, Zermatt, which is by the Matterhorn. It's, that one actually does not have, it doesn't have a train, or I forget now what it is. There's no road or no train. Now I can't remember one of the two. We can look that up.
But, yeah.
It might be a road because it is a pretty significant skiing village. You can drive in or something like that, if
yeah.
I remember right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think no driving. I think that's what it was. I've been there. I don't remember now. But no, otherwise, yes. I mean, it might look that way, but there's access and buses and trains that go everywhere. So
I mean, outside of the banking industry, the things that immediately jump at me when I think Switzerland is the world famous Swiss chocolate. Yeah. That's a staple.
Nestle, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Nestle is not just chocolate, but it's food industry. Mm-hmm. Nestle is huge. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been bought by Germany at this point or someone. But
yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the watchmaking industry. The Swiss have set the standards for eons. And I mean, the highest quality watches usually come out of Switzerland.
Yeah, and I think that's reflected in the culture too. Swiss people are very punctual, I think more so than Germans.
Is that possible?
The train is like, you can set your watch by it. It'll go exactly at the right time. People are very punctual. And also, you know, the way a watch is made, I think Swiss people are very sort of particular, and there's a certain way to do something, or most things, really, whether it's, you know, taking out the trash or building a watch or whatever. There's a really sort of a set way to do things, and that's what people do, and that's what's expected, and everybody does it, and we're very sort of, we expect it from others to kind of follow these rules as well, and it's efficient too.
So, since we're at the whole rule thing, what are the things that you should absolutely not do when you're in Switzerland? I mean, what are the cultural infractions that immediately get you a side eye or worse?
Don't take someone's parking spot. I got a good talking to when my car, you know, you park on the street and it's really free parking, but where I lived, people, you know, kind of have their spot, and it's sort of understood that, well, this is kind of their spot. I didn't know that at the time, but I got a knock at the door and said, oh, could you please move your car 30 centimeters up, because otherwise so-and-so has a hard time getting out of her spot or whatever. So people are very friendly, I think, very friendly and polite, but they're not going to, and a little bit zurückhaltend.
Shy?
Standoffish?
No. Yeah, but not in a bad way.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, hold back a little bit. We think of Germans as more sort of...
In your face.
Yep. So we kind of hold back, but we're polite, but we're also honest and direct. We're going to say, well, this, your car is not quite in the right spot, so can you please not do that? And then you just, okay, don't do it anymore. So.
Yeah, I mean, in southern Germany, and I think Switzerland might be the same thing too, you know, cleanliness is really, really important.
Order.
And I mean, in Germany, we have something that's called Kehrwoche, where people who, if you live in an apartment building or even in your own house, you know, there's something where you clean inside and outside on a regular basis. And, you know, you sweep the sidewalks, or if you live in an apartment building, people sweep the stairs. So I think, you know, because I've been to Switzerland many times too, it's very clean.
It's a very clean country. Yep. And you see, I mean, it's a very common sight to drive up or past a farm, and there's the grandpa out front sweeping.
Sweeping the street, basically.
Sweeping the street.
The sidewalk, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't take anyone's parking spots.
Don't
else?
Litter.
Don't litter, obviously. Yeah. That would make a lot of sense,
the
I suppose.
The other thing is Switzerland is not part of the European Union. And, you know, so they're neutral, which means when you come from any other place, you actually have to cross a border to get into Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to drive on the streets, on the Autobahn, you have to buy a vignette.
Yes, you have to.
And people get outraged at how expensive it is.
Yes, it is.
Switzerland's an expensive country.
Yes.
Well, since
so
you're...
what's the currency in Switzerland?
Schweizer Franken, francs.
Yeah, which they still, obviously, since you're not a member of the European Union, you still have your francs. You beautifully led the way towards stereotypes. let's talk about the, elephant in the room. From an Austrian perspective, the Swiss are very reserved.
Reserved, there, that's the word I was looking for before.
Okay.
Capable of switching into multiple languages, almost simultaneously or in quick succession, so much so that the majority of people who are in earshot are probably confused. So if you want to express something that another person cannot understand, all you have to do is just switch languages, and we are looking like we have no idea what's going on. Switzerland is perceived as being incredibly expensive, prohibitively expensive, but it's also sort of this treasure chest that we can't really wrap our head around, that there's something just magnificent going on inside the wonderful borders of Switzerland, and we have no idea what it is. We're trying to figure it out, but we can't. There's something that escapes us. That's the Austrian perspective, at least from my end, and I'm sure there are various additions to that. As a Swiss national, obviously, your grin, which nobody can see, but it's there. What do you think when you hear things like that?
Oh, it's just funny. I mean, I think Switzerland is just, we're reserved people. We like to do things our own way. It's very true. The whole neutral thing didn't come from nowhere. We like to do things our own way and very sort of in a very structured, efficient manner. And we expect people to do the same. And we look at countries around us and yeah, they do their thing, but we do our thing. And maybe that's where looking in from the outside, it might like look like, what's going on in there? We're reserved about it, I guess.
Well, it's working for Switzerland, right? So then there's really no reason to change. I mean, Switzerland has been independent and hasn't been part of the European Union or any of these other things. But, you know, Switzerland seems to flourish. So,
and we have to make it work. You know, there's always things. How can we work with the countries around us? What opportunities can we find to work with other countries and stuff? So people do, you know, talk about that stuff. Have to figure it out.
The other thing, again, you know, completely stereotypical.
Yep.
The perspective is, since Switzerland, and I think particularly, is it Geneva, is essentially the most expensive city in the world every other year.
Really?
Yeah, competing with Singapore. It's either Zurich or Geneva. Yeah. So the perspective, at least looking from the outside in, is to cast everybody under the same light and say, well, every Swiss national is filthy rich.
It's rich.
You could essentially buy an uninhabited island and create another Swiss nation. I'm guessing it's probably not true.
No, it's not. We do have a lot of, you know, actually, I think we have a lot of foreigners, right, in Switzerland, percentage-wise. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are from Germany.
Right.
Because obviously the language is easier. But no, yes, certainly there are some rich people in Switzerland, but I think the everything is just expensive. I actually see it less so in America. There's the really rich and the really poor, and in Switzerland there's more just of a middle ground, in my opinion. And people are very careful. You know, every trash bag costs you 2 francs or whatever. So people, recycle.
Right.
And do all sort of the right things in that way. But people are careful. I don't think it's a country where people are just, spend money on carelessly. People don't spend money carelessly. Insurances cost a lot. Rent costs a lot. All of that stuff. It's expensive. Food, everything. Other than chocolate. Chocolate's not too bad.
Really. Actually, when we were talking about that, the other thing that Switzerland is actually known for as well is the pharmaceutical industry. Mm. So, and, you know, some of the northern tier has pharmaceutical industry. And considering, you know, how many people live in Switzerland, approximately?
It's got to be sub 8 million.
Something like that. Yeah. I think around that, though,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have some of these larger cities, you know, so probably the majority of the population lives in some of these larger cities. And you know, considering that, you know, so you have fewer people living in the whole country of Switzerland than in New York City. Mm-hmm. And yet it's still a, you know, economic powerhouse, but a lot of it is too, because in Germany it's similar, in Austria probably similar too. We're used to paying higher taxes, but mm-hmm. in return for those higher taxes, there are services that are available, and the way the country is run and the country is taken care of, whether it's health insurance or whether it's other, so, you know, public transportation and those public services, you know, it's just, we grew up with it and we're expecting different things versus how things are done here in the US.
And that actually brings me to a point of difference. I think Switzerland's actually pretty low taxes in comparison to most other European countries.
Okay. So then how does Switzerland pay for all of this stuff?
Yeah. Good question.
but you do have you do have general healthcare or social healthcare or healthcare for everyone.
It's private.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, we pay for healthcare. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it is available for everyone.
You have to have it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So if you want it at work or anything, you have to have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just
looked
it up.
We also have, if that's still the case, I guess, I don't know if that's changed since I've lived here or not, but we have what's called the 13th month.
Yes.
Do you have that too in Germany?
Yes, for wages.
That pays basically for your taxes.
We have 14.
Really?
Yeah, well, it depends on the profession.
Correct. Yeah, we have anywhere between 12 and a half, 13, 14, depending on where you work, because you get an extra month wages sometimes for vacation and paid vacation plus extra. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Commonly, it's I think July and end of November, beginning of December, depending on when you get paid, that you have your 13th and 14th salary, which is the equivalent of a regular monthly income, just 13 and 14, or number 13 and 14, which because you're deserving of a decent vacation and decent Christmas. So there is your pot of gold and spend it wisely, basically.
We spend it on our taxes, usually. It's just about the right amount.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I just looked it up. Austria is at 8.8, Switzerland at 8.5, and Germany at 82.7 million.
Yeah. I thought Austria was more.
Austria is just in the same neighborhood.
So if you think about, Germany has 10 times more than both Switzerland and Austria.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, and I'm completely shifting the topic, and if I'm going way overboard, stop me at any point in time, please. One of the biggest references from American political perspective, if you will, is that Switzerland is the poster child of the Second Amendment in the European framework, with everybody having a gun at home.
Second Amendment.
So everybody has a firearm at home, and it is one of the safest societies in the world because everybody is armed. For one, is everybody actually really armed? And for another, I mean, yes, Switzerland is incredibly safe, but is there a correlation from your perspective because everybody is armed?
Absolutely not. That is not why Switzerland's safe. Yes, everybody does have a gun. And by everybody, I mean, the men are required to go to military service. Mm-hmm. Women can go, but they're not required yet. But then, they bring their. It's a standing militia, so if World War III hits, we have to be ready. So the gun stays at home, and there's a lot of rules around it. You have to go to practice so and so often, and in my opinion, that is not why Switzerland's safe, though.
Okay.
I don't know why that would make it safe, but.
Well, that is, it's for me, it's the big question mark. But that is one of the common references that I see in the Twitter sphere and in other social media networks when it comes to the discussion whether we should have some form of gun control or human control, essentially, in the U.S. when it comes to guns. And then Switzerland usually comes up to the surface like, they all have guns.
They all have guns and it's very safe, yeah.
But how many guns do they have, right? Does the household have then one gun or rifle, or is it a rifle, or is it a handgun, or is it a semi-automatic weapon, right? I mean, those are some of maybe the nuances.
Yeah.
And like Deb said, men have done military service, so they've been trained on how to safely handle something. But when you said military service, here's a little obscure little thing. The Swiss Guard are the people that protect the Pope.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So so the people...
That's an old traditional thing. Old,
and they're very colorful, whatever thing. So is that part of the military service and only some of the people who are like specifically picked are the ones that get to protect the Pope? Because why do the Swiss protect the Pope and not the Italians or somebody else, right?
I don't know exactly the story behind it, but Switzerland used to be mercenaries. A lot of Swiss, they would be hired to go fight other people's wars, and then once we came together as a country, we said we will not do that anymore. That was kind of one of our things. But I think it's a leftover from that. It must have started early,
hundreds
or something
years ago,
like that. Yeah. It's an exception basically to our rule of we do not fight countries or guard foreign foreigners, basically.
Okay.
So I think it's just a really old traditional thing that I don't think has anything or not much to do with the current Swiss military.
Okay, so it's not that, you know, you join the, or you, you go, and if you are especially good, you get to be part of the Swiss Guard that protects the Pope.
Not that I know of, but exactly the track that it would take to get to there, I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably making somebody really angry right now, but I'll go for it anyway. My guess is that the Swiss Guard in the Vatican has a more decorative function, simply because of the way that they're dressed. It is very decorative, and it's very complementary to the whole look and feel of the Vatican. And I'm sure there are some special units that you can't see that actually really truly have a protective function.
Well, but, and I wonder if it is the same people that actually protect the Pope out of uniform, that just similar to like the guards at Buckingham Palace or whatever, right? I mean, they look very decorative, but they are actually really, really highly trained people. So I wonder if it's the same thing with the Swiss Guard, where they have a representative decorative type part of it, but their day job, in a sense, is, you know, similar to Secret Service protects the president. I wonder if out of uniform they protect the Pope.
So this is the appeal to the listening audience. If you happen to know and you have any insights, please shoot us an email and educate us, because in the interest of time, we are not going to Google that and work through millions of documents to find an appropriate answer. Right. So if you have one, please bring it to us.
Right.
How do the Swiss, and this is, of course, a very personal question, but how do the Swiss view the Germans and the Austrians?
Oh, boy.
On the spot.
On the spot. No, I mean... I think, like I said, Swiss are more reserved. So we think of the Germans generally as a bit louder than us and a bit more direct and kind of...
rude.
Gregarious.
Yeah, maybe rude, but just kind of louder. More kind of in your face, maybe a little bit. The Austrians, all I can think of really is, you know, skiing and our rivalry there, kind of, they did better than us. And,
I was just going to mention that, right, between the two countries, you know, because they're both alpine countries, skiing is a big thing, right? Downhill skiing mostly,
Downhill skiing mostly, and that was before the Norwegians showed up and basically dominated everybody.
No, but otherwise, I mean, with Germany, I think there's a little bit of a, you know, some people, you know, don't like Germans coming and, you know, taking our jobs or something like that. But there's a little bit of the big brother up in the north kind of attitude. Like if they do something good, oh, sure, yeah, that's us. But if they do something bad, oh, no, that's not us. So,
But then since Switzerland then also obviously has France and Italy, how does Switzerland see those countries in the same way?
I think less so. But maybe the French-speaking Swiss.
Right.
Have more of a connection there, but they, you know, you go to the Italian speaking part of Switzerland, it feels like you're in Italy. I mean, it feels just the same, except maybe cleaner.
Cleaner than Italy.
Yeah.
Whoops.
But, you know, but, and then the language, there's language differences too, between the Swiss Italian and the, you know, Italian. So, but yeah, I don't know how they sort of feel towards their countries.
Right.
Outside of Christmas, I'm guessing Easter and what do we have? New Year's. What are significant holidays in Switzerland that we probably don't celebrate in Austria or Germany?
Yeah, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is 1st of August, which is Swiss Independence Day.
Ah.
Yeah. And so we have fireworks and people go out, usually go out and have a picnic, and we call it Brötle, which is, you know, roasting sausages over fire somewhere in the forest. There's all kinds of grill spots in the forest everywhere on hills.
It's called Brötle.
It's called Brötle.
So see, immediately, and I mean, this brings us back to the beginning of this recording, immediately my head goes to small bread.
Yeah, you know? Brötle.
Brötle. Ah. Brötchen.
Yeah.
So.
No, it has to do with roasting.
Yeah.
So Brötle, in my mind, it's a verb, has to do with roasting.
Or
Braten.
Braten.
Okay.
Yeah, so people make salads. Traditionally, people make salads, bring sliced bread and brats.
Okay, so that's first of August.
So you kind of hang out and then you stick around until the fireworks.
Okay. And you said it's Independence Day. Independence from whom?
The Austrians and the Germans. It's mostly the Austrian overlords, I think.
Should I come back in 5 minutes?
Okay. But it is. It's the Rütli-Schwur is what was done on the 1st of August in 1291. Okay, could be wrong. Could be 92.
Something like that.
But that's when we lit the fire from one mountain. And on the next mountain, they saw it and then lit their fire, and it was kind of a chain reaction. It was a swearing of an oath is what happened that day. And
it was called the Rütli-Schwur.
Yeah. Okay. And if you go to the Luzern, the Vierwaldstättersee in the central part of Switzerland, that was done. And that was only maybe 3 or 4 cantons at the time, and then more and more cantons added over time. So,
okay.
But to that degree, we do have a very healthy, functional, and friendly relationship with the Swiss. Just want to point that out.
Yes.
In fact, and this, of course, takes it into a totally different realm before Austrians get accused of something else, we did give you Red Bull. Because I do remember Red Bull was illegal, quote unquote, in Switzerland for the longest time because of some of the ingredients.
Oh.
So even though in Austria it had hit mainstream at that point already, we had numerous bartenders actually jump the border, buying case after case after case, going back to Switzerland and sell it just for premium franc.
No way.
Yeah, that was the smuggling of the Red Bull, and it was so commonplace that it almost was a hobby, I suppose, for some people.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and obviously we all share borders, right? And, you know, the southern border of Germany on one side is Switzerland, and on the other side is Austria. And, you know, we have the Bodensee together between Germany and Switzerland. So, I mean, it's all a friendly collaboration now.
Yeah, I remember I did ski into Switzerland, Istre in Bad Snauntal.
Oh, yeah.
So basically you can just essentially jump on the chairlift, get up to the mountain, ski into Switzerland, do some shopping in Switzerland, and then ski back. Yeah,
yes. Right.
Yeah. Just make sure you don't forget to pay your import taxes.
That's
Hint.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. What else? Anything that we forgot to ask, since we do have that one shot at Switzerland and Swiss information?
One thing that I think might be different from your countries, I'm not sure, but is voting. We get to vote on a lot of things, from like should the cows still have cowbells to, you know, smoking indoors to like finance stuff about the country, different things. So do you have this?
Well, no.
We do vote on most things in Austria. I don't think it gets as granular as should the cows still have bells, and then what at what tonality do those bells ring? I think there might be things that are on a very regional level. It always starts at a very granular level and then essentially works its way up to what would be the Nationalrat or the Senate, if you will. But you might be actually a little more evolved in terms of everybody participating in the collective decision making.
Mm-hmm. And you have to vote too. You either vote or you pay money.
Really?
It's not expensive, but if you don't vote, you have a buße, eine buße.
Wow.
There's a penalty for not voting.
Mm-hmm. A fine.
Fine. Yeah.
So much for keeping it, how do you call it? Secret. So, I mean, or do you just like tell them, well, you just show up, you say you voted, so I guess on the voters list, but so they don't ask who you voted for?
No, I mean, traditionally, and I think there's still some small towns where you literally the villagers gather together and raise their hand, vote for so-and-so, raise your hand. That's traditionally how it was done.
Well,
you know, until not too long ago, only the men could do that.
Right.
And that's still sort of a tradition, I think. And I think it's sort of at this point kind of upheld just because it was a traditional thing.
Right.
But no, I vote with a Stimmzettel, fill out
a ballot.
Yeah.
So it is a paper ballot still.
Paper ballot, yeah, 2-3 times a year, or if something comes up. So if you, you know, if you don't like something, you know, the church bells ring too loud or something, then you can go around, gather signatures, and if you have enough, it'll become a Volksinitiative, an initiative.
Yeah.
I think. So, and then it can be put on a ballot, potentially.
Those happen in regular intervals or in irregular, when something gets important enough, then it suddenly becomes a votable item outside of the regular voting schedule, or do they have to wait their turn until regular voting takes place?
I think it's regular voting time. Yeah, I think it's regular.
Yeah, otherwise you'll never get out of the
out of
the voting cycle.
Yeah,
I suppose.
But I mean, obviously, if people have other thoughts or questions or things, they can always send us an email to language@gai-mn.org. And we'll be more than happy to address that. And this kind of wet people's whistle, you know, both Deb and Michael, who are our regular podcast contributors, are teaching here at the GAI. So if you do happen to have them in a class, feel free to ask questions about their respective homelands.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I actually did learn quite a lot today, things that I didn't expect, and certainly things that I need to revise in my future presentation of what the Swiss are like. lesson learned. Yeah, Deb, thank you so much for coming on. That was great. We'll call you back for sure.
Anytime.
And Claudia, you have an entire stack of papers. So there's a lot going on, a lot happening. Up front, since this episode will likely be out Friday, which is going to be the 14th of March. 13th of March. Mm-hmm. The week after, we will have on the 16th, Fred Amram, and then on the 17th, Mindy Ratner from NPR. Both are speaking to the upcoming April Holocaust Remembrance Month. So there will be, I would presume, pretty in-depth discussions and lots of historic knowledge and a lot of, I would say, given the current time, things that we really should pay attention to. So stay tuned for that. And Claudia, what do you have?
Yeah, and in addition to that, there's additional programming in April around Holocaust Remembrance Month. So make sure you check our website, which again is gai-mn.org. But coming up this weekend, on Sunday, March 15th, from 2 to 4:30 in the afternoon, we have a traditional afternoon German Kaffee and Kuchen. So if you want to come to the GAI Sunday afternoon and have some traditional coffee and cake, it's from 2 to 4:30. And if you feel like learning a little bit of German along with that, we also have a Schnupperkurs, an introduction to German. So you can come and just enjoy coffee and cake, or you can enjoy coffee and cake with a two-hour introductory lesson in German called Schnupperkurs. If you are already learning German with us, we have another round of classes for the beginners starting in April. So the START series starts again in the second week of April. And if you've taken some intermediate or advanced classes, take a look on the website. Spring Spezial classes are also starting in April. We have a advanced beginner and intermediate level class, Einfach besser Deutsch, where we're reading articles from Deutsch Perfekt. Or for our advanced speakers, we have a very interesting session coming up in April. It's called Von Goethe, Gras und Grönemeyer. Gedichte. So
that's quite the stretch from Goethe to Grönemeyer.
But that's the whole point, right? I mean, lyricists and writing and poetry has been something that's been that Germany has been known for, and obviously it's changed quite a bit. And some of it is political, some of it is, Goethe, obviously very classic. Grönemeyer is a songwriter, so join the advanced class in that. If you are going to miss your German class during spring break, which is the first week of April, check out our Freitag Feierabend, our Friday evening happy hour, which is scheduled Friday, April the 3rd. And just before that, at the end of March, we have one of our Kaffeestube European breakfasts scheduled, March 28th from 9 to 11. followed by a program called Kaffeestube Talk, where Barbara Müller, who is the honorary consul of Germany, is talking about dual citizenship opportunities. So for Americans who are interested in becoming German citizens, or, you know, people who are wondering if they're eligible. So that is March 28th, which is a Saturday, combined with a Kaffeestube European breakfast. Again, you can register for the Kaffeestube plus the talk, or just Kaffeestube, or just or both together. So again, all that information is on our website. And then in April, not only is Easter, but not only is Holocaust Remembrance, but also Easter. And we're again offering a Pysanky European egg decorating class on Saturday, April the 4th. And like that's not enough, we also have a bunch of programs with summer camp registration.
Question to the egg decorating class. Is there an age limit?
That's a good question. It says 12 or older.
12 or older.
Yeah. Okay. And programs for kids and teens. So summer camp registration is open. As always, we have a whole range of programs for kids as young as 5 years old and up to 13. And then this year, we're also really, really excited to offer a program called Climate Kids, which is a climate workshop for teens, which is an 8-week session, which is actually funded by the embassy. And it's an interactive climate and culture workshop for teens leading to a Klimagipfel or climate summit at Deutsche Tage in June. So if you're interested in that, or have young people that are interested in that, check it out. This is a program for young people 13 to 16 years old who already know a little bit of German. So again, lots of programs, lots of events coming up. If you couldn't keep track of all of it, take a look at our website, gai-mn.org. And as always, thanks for listening.
Wow, there's a lot going on.
I know, that's why I had a stack of papers.
Yeah. It's quite a stack. All right. Well, that pretty much concludes this episode. Once again, Deb, thank you so much for coming.
Bitte schön.
And Claudia, as always, thank you.
Gern geschehen.
And that would be it. We will hear you again this week and next week twice. And then in April again. So there's a lot going on. Not just in the house, but also with the podcast. As always, if you have questions, please email them to us and we'll be happy to include them in our next episodes. Until then, this is Michael signing off. Tschüss.